Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. The Department of Homeland Security has issued a list of sanctuary cities and counties that it claims are violating federal immigration mandates, and five local jurisdictions are included, putting them at risk of losing federal funding in retaliation. But you may be surprised to learn which cities made that list. Businesses owned by local refugees came together in El Cajon at a bazaar recently to benefit new refugees. But now, some refugees are at risk of deportation since President Donald Trump issued an executive order seeking to take away special protected status from some groups, including Afghan refugees, many of whom live in San Diego's East County, including some who helped U.S. military troops. San Diego County has issued a health warning about tuberculosis at two local homeless shelters, and we'll have details on our show today. Then on Green Scene, hear about a major expansion of the county's Santa Isabel Preserve to protect habitat and endangered species. Former El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso and his wife violated the city's building and zoning codes with major unpermitted construction by unlicensed contractors at the Fletcher Hills home they've been renting out, a judge has ruled. But the judge is giving the Colassos one last chance to allow city inspectors onto the property and to bring it up to code before considering whether to issue massive fines or perhaps place the property into receivership to be sold. As the weather warms up and brush across the backcountry dries out, Cal Fire has suspended burn permits on state-controlled lands. On the anniversary of the death of Bill Walton, NBA basketball superstar and La Mesa hometown hero, a legacy project has been launched to honor his memory, and we'll have details on our show today. Grossmont Healthcare District has issued scholarships to help train healthcare workers of tomorrow. Then on 2025 Talks, we'll have some national news updates, including court rulings on Trump's tariffs, a free speech battle brewing over whether or not the president can restrict student visas at Harvard and potentially other colleges or universities, and the latest on peace talks seeking to end the Israeli-Gaza war. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, where East County matters. Homeland Security has published a list of over 500 sanctuary jurisdictions that it claims are obstructing enforcement of federal immigration laws. That list includes San Diego County as well as four local cities, Santee, San Diego, Chula Vista, and Vista. The criteria for inclusion is baffling since the list includes both conservative-run and liberal-run jurisdictions locally. Homeland Security has not specified why any particular city or county is on the list. The stakes are high, however, since under an executive order issued by President Donald Trump on April 28th, federal grants and contracts with sanctuary jurisdictions are to be suspended or terminated. Although the Homeland Security website states that jurisdictions would be notified, all five local jurisdictions have indicated that they did not receive any notification before being publicly listed. San Diego County supervisors did vote 3-1 late last year to adopt the sanctuary policy that sought to go farther than state law, barring any cooperation with ICE unless a warrant is issued by a judge. However, Sheriff Kelly Martinez effectively nullified that action when she said her office will continue following the limits under state law. Vista Mayor John Franklin issued a statement indicating that Vista is not a sanctuary city and that its city council voted to support Donald Trump's fight against California's policies. Franklin said he has asked President Trump to correct this error immediately. Santee's city council is comprised of five Republicans, and its mayor is a former police officer. Its inclusion on the list is baffling. Santee's marketing manager Bree Osborne, in an email to East County Magazine, says, "We were genuinely surprised to learn that Santee was included on the list published by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security." Osborne says the city is reviewing the situation to determine the facts, adding, "We take matters like this seriously." Chula Vista has not declared itself a sanctuary city or adopted policies limiting cooperation with immigration authorities beyond what state law allows. The city council previously opted against voting to become a sanctuary city and voted instead to support Senate Bill 54, California's current law on the matter. SB 54 allows local cities and counties to cooperate with federal immigration authorities regarding immigrants convicted of specific serious crimes only, provided there is a warrant. The federal government, however, is pressuring local governments to go farther, and federal immigration authorities recently have picked up numerous individuals who have not been convicted of any crimes or even charged with them in many cases. City of San Diego spokesperson Rachel Lang issued a statement indicating that the city will continue to comply with state and federal laws, adding, "We will protect the interests of our residents and retain our distinction of being one of the safest big cities in the United States." San Diego City Attorney Heather Ferbert says the city's sanctuary policies are legal and make us all safer. The city of San Diego is suing the Trump administration, along with 15 other jurisdictions across the nation in that suit, challenging federal actions against sanctuary cities that threaten funding for critical public safety services. A federal judge in April issued a preliminary injunction to protect funding while the case is appealed. Ferbert says what's happening is a blatantly illegal attempt to sidestep the courts and bully local governments into doing ICE's job by threatening to cut off billions in federal funding. Such funds are used for vital services such as roads, public transit, homelessness, gang violence prevention, health care, disaster relief, opioid treatment, victim services, and emergency responses. San Diego's city attorney concludes, "This funding is taxpayer money meant to serve local communities, not be held for ransom." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Refugees who fled violence and persecution in their homelands and later started up businesses locally came together at the United We Dreams Bazaar at the Palms in downtown El Cajon on Sunday, May 18th. All have one thing in common. The El Cajon-based nonprofit License to Freedom helped them start up their businesses and achieve self-sufficiency and sanctuary here. At the bazaar, these refugee entrepreneurs donated 100% of their sale proceeds to License to Freedom to help new refugees have similar opportunities to attain the American dream. License to Freedom was founded in 2002 by Dilquaz Ahmed, a Kurdish immigrant with a background in psychology and who was a women's rights activist in Iraq. "All of these people are great and good," says Ahmed, who offers counseling, puts refugees in touch with immigration attorneys when needed, and helps them become business owners. This lively marketplace features handmade crafts, traditional food and music, and cultural dances, a small business booth run by immigrants and refugees, selling handmade items such as colorful clothing, purses, candles, houseware, jewelry, and skincare items. Some participants join in dancing to ethnic music at the event, attended by around 300 people. Volunteers also serve up samples of Afghan foods. One of the many vendors here is Marwa Ramid, an independent artist from Iraq who specializes in jewelry and custom creations made from jasmonite, an eco-friendly resin material. "I'm a single mom here," she says. "I have two kids, and I'm also a student." Angela and Francois Abla own a skincare and dietary company. Angela is from Togo in West Africa. Her husband served in the U.S. Navy. They sell aloe vera drinks, perfumes, vegan products, and nutritional supplements, plus more. Sharman Tahir, owner of So Happy, came to the U.S. from Kurdistan, where Kurdish culture, languages, and national identity have been historically based. She gives sewing lessons to children and adults, also hosting seasonal camps and birthday parties specializing in homemade arts and crafts. She says, "When I was 4 years old, my family had to leave because of a genocide. Through my dad, we came here. We found refuge." She is grateful to be in America. She says, "Because it's the land of opportunity, for all of us, I hope." Many of the vendors came here as refugees from Afghanistan. One Afghan woman offered brightly colored, intricately detailed traditional Afghan clothing, which can no longer be worn in Afghanistan under the Taliban's strict rule, which requires women to wear burqas. She says she misses her homeland deeply, but accepts that it's impossible to return. Some Afghans in the U.S. likely will be forced to return to their war-torn homeland due to the vehement crackdown on immigration and new deportation tactics. President Donald Trump has issued an executive order taking away temporary protected status for Afghans who came here legally, putting as many as 9,000 Afghans at risk of deportation, including many of whom who helped the U.S. military, such as translators. The Trump administration falsely claims their country is no longer dangerous for them, a sentiment that confounds experts, since sending Afghan refugees back to Afghanistan clearly would expose them to extreme danger. Zia Ghafouri, a U.S. Army Special Forces interpreter in combat, has stated, "It's a death penalty for them if they return." Bill Frelick with Human Rights Watch calls the move to revoke the status for Afghans a betrayal of U.S. commitments, adding, "The only justification for revoking temporary protection would be if permanent protection was being offered, since Taliban rule clearly makes returns unsafe." Last month, the Trump administration Department of Homeland Security similarly attempted to revoke temporary protected status for Venezuelans, a move that was challenged in court and paused by a federal judge on March 31st. The judge found that the policy would inflict irreparable harm. Ironically, while the Trump administration has sought to take away protected status for primarily immigrants and refugees of color, while refusing entry for black refugees fleeing war and famine in African nations, the administration recently welcomed white South Africans as refugees under an executive order mandating that they be prioritized for resettlement. When in power, white Afrikaners imposed racist apartheid policies subjugating non-white South Africans. South Africa's president has reported that the Afrikaners' claims of genocide are false, and major media outlets confirm that no such genocide against whites has occurred in South Africa. By contrast, claims of imminent danger made by many non-white Africans seeking refugee status in the U.S. are clear and indisputable. Those at the United We Stand Bazaar are fortunate to have been able to come here as refugees, or immigrants, before the current policies, which aim to prohibit future waves of refugees from finding freedom and safety in America. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Juliet Sanders.
This is John Tidwell with a health alert about tuberculosis exposure at two local homeless shelters. San Diego County Public Health is working closely with Father Joe's Villages and the San Diego Rescue Mission to notify residents, employees, and volunteers who may have potentially been exposed to TB. The dates of potential exposure at Father Joe's Villages Paul Mirabile Center are from February 14th to March 18th, and from April 6th to May 7th. Dates of potential exposure at the San Diego Rescue Mission South County Lighthouse are from March 28th to April 11th. TB is an airborne disease that is transmitted from person to person through inhalation of the bacteria from the air. The bacteria are spread when someone who is sick with TB coughs, speaks, sings, or breathes. People with frequent and prolonged indoor exposure to a person who is sick with TB should get tested. People experiencing homelessness have a higher risk for exposure from another person with active TB in shelters. Many also face challenges accessing health care. In San Diego County, most people who are diagnosed with TB have not been recently homeless. However, the rate of the disease is much higher among people who have experienced homelessness compared with the general population. Symptoms of active TB include persistent cough, fever, night sweats, and unexplained weight loss. Most people who become infected after exposure to tuberculosis do not get sick right away. This is called latent TB infection. Some who become infected with tuberculosis will become ill in the future, sometimes even years later, if their latent TB infection is not treated. For people who think they may have been exposed, blood tests and skin tests are the effective way to determine an infection, the county's top health official advises. Effective treatments are available to cure people who are sick with active TB. It is especially important for people with symptoms of active TB and those who are immunocompromised to see a medical provider to rule out active TB disease and to discuss treatment. People who test positive for TB but don't have symptoms should get a chest x-ray and talk to a medical provider, as they most likely have a latent TB infection. Taking medications for latent TB infection can cure the infection and keep these people from getting sick later. After decades of declining, the number of people diagnosed with active TB in San Diego County has been on the rise since 2020. In 2020, there were 193 TB cases, with 201 in 2021, 208 in 2022, and 242 in 2023. In 2024, a total number of 247 people were reported with active TB disease in San Diego County. An estimated 175 people in San Diego County have latent TB infection. Of these, 5 to 10% are at risk of developing active TB disease if they go without preventative treatment. For more information on this potential TB exposure, you can call the County Tuberculosis Control Program at 619-692-8621.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a special report on the anniversary of a night of chaos in La Mesa. It's been 5 years since the last Saturday in May 2020, when the city of La Mesa found itself smack in the epicenter of racial justice protests and civil unrest that mirrored a nationwide outcry against police brutality. The protests later exploded into violence, ending with buildings in flames and a small-town community often likened to Mayberry left shell-shocked. Since then, the city has made strides to improve communications, public outreach, and policing, as the city's mayor, police chief, and city manager told East County Magazine in exclusive interviews. Sparked by the controversial stop of Amare Johnson, a black man, by Matthew Dages, a white La Mesa police officer at a trolley stop near Grossmont Center just days earlier, the protest came against the backdrop of a nation mourning the death of George Floyd, a black man killed by a white Minneapolis police officer who was later found guilty of murder. The local demonstration began the morning of May 30th as a peaceful protest. Thousands flocked to the city for the large gathering that was the first locally since COVID-19 pandemic lockdowns were ordered countywide in March. The day began with demonstrators holding posters, marching, chanting Black Lives Matter, and gathering outside the police station with a list of demands for reforms that went unanswered. As the day progressed, protesters flooded the streets, taking over key intersections and even parts of Interstate 8. Later, the protest evolved into confrontations and clashes around the city, ending with businesses vandalized and buildings in flames. These are the sounds of arsonists setting fire to the Randall Lamb Building, which was captured on video by an East County Magazine photographer. Widespread chaos drew multiple agencies, including local police, the San Diego County Sheriff's Department, and the California Highway Patrol, to the scene. As evening descended, an angry mob hurled bottles, rocks, and Molotov cocktails at police, who declared an unlawful assembly. Rioters clashed with law enforcement, resulting in a trail of injuries and property damage. Beanbag rounds, tear gas, and pepper balls were deployed as police sought to regain control, a response that would soon become one of the most debated aspects of the night. Among the incidents reported were several protesters suffering serious injuries. One woman was left blinded in one eye from a beanbag round, and an 18-year-old required surgical staples after being hit. Fires, graffiti, looting, and widespread mayhem rocked the city. Into the early morning hours of May 31st, millions of dollars of property damage were incurred as two banks and one historical building burned to the ground. After being pelted with rocks, firefighters returned to the station, leaving the banks and Randall Lamb Architectural Firm's buildings to burn. One city official told East County Magazine's editor shortly after midnight that he feared the historic downtown village could burn completely down. Smaller fires were doused at City Hall, a grocery store, and other sites. Many stores were looted and gutted. Meanwhile, business owners and residents were left feeling anxious, angry, and frustrated over the violence, as well as the lack of communications from the city, other than a curfew declaration around 1 a.m. on May 31st, after multiple buildings and vehicles had been destroyed. East County Magazine had reporters across La Mesa, reporting on the initially peaceful march and the mayhem that followed, including looting at Grossmont Center in downtown. Police in riot gear confronting a hostile crowd, a pastor mentoring those on the streets, and buildings ignited by arsonists. Our reporters and photographers risked their own safety to keep the public informed throughout that long night, suffering pepper spray and tear gas despite being clearly identified as media, later winning multiple journalism awards for coverage of the protest and its violent aftermath. Some local business owners, watching live-streamed video online, headed downtown to defend their stores themselves. Vigilantes also came to the city that night and during protests the coming days, some from a newly formed group calling itself Defend East County. While initially welcomed by some business owners for protection, the vigilantes later drew criticism for brutality of their own, attacking some peaceful protesters in La Mesa and other communities locally. The events of May 30th and 31st, 2020 remain a pivotal moment in La Mesa's history, prompting ongoing discussions about justice, accountability, and community healing. Now etched into history, the events serve as a sure reminder of the need for systemic evolution in policing practices, a lesson that extends far beyond city limits. When all was said and done, La Mesa declared a state of emergency while extending it over multiple days, ultimately bringing in the National Guard to maintain the peace in ensuing days. But the turbulent events also led to something positive, a revival of community spirit with neighbors helping neighbors. Community members successfully led a citywide cleanup effort on May 31st with more than 600 people from across East County showing up with mops, brooms, and paintbrushes to remove debris and graffiti. People like Jerry Corley, who came all the way from Alpine and bought paint himself just to help out.
With the graffiti, Home Depot mixed me up, put me close. Wow. Made my way in here, found a place, got my cart, got my paint, and I'm painting.
So you just went to Home Depot and you're helping paint over the graffiti.
I painted over the graffiti.
Good for you.
We're and make it look good so we can open up tomorrow.
Mural artists came in the days that followed to brighten up boarded-up businesses that were vandalized, and others that put up plywood to protect against feared future vandalism that fortunately did not occur in subsequent protests. Soon, flower images and messages of peace and love blossomed along the city's downtown storefronts. The East County Chamber of Commerce and local leaders led by El Cajon City Council member Phil Ortiz raised more than $260,000 to help La Mesa businesses pay for repairs. In August 2020, La Mesa Police Chief Walt Vasquez announced his retirement. The city promoted Ray Sweeney to become the future chief, with the daunting task of rebuilding community relations and preventing a future fiasco. The city sought answers through an independent after-action report prepared by outside consultants Hilliard Heinz in 2021. The report candidly criticized the police department for being ill-prepared for the surge of civil unrest back in 2020. It highlighted deficiencies in the city's emergency communications, coordination, and intelligence gathering, all of which contributed to the first responders being overwhelmed the night of May 30th. The report recommended improvements in planning, communication, and community engagement, and laid out 13 concrete recommendations for the city and its police department, urging reforms ranging from updated use of force policies to a more robust civilian oversight mechanism. Officer Dages was terminated from the La Mesa Police Department after an administrative investigation concluded that he detained Johnson without reasonable suspicion and made false statements in his police report. Officer Dages was charged with a felony for falsifying that report, but was acquitted by a jury in December 2021, and a San Diego Superior Court judge upheld his dismissal. But with the enactment in 2021 by California of Senate Bill 2, allowing for decertification of officers found to have committed serious misconduct, Dages was decertified, barring him from serving as a law enforcement officer in the state. Johnson, who was never charged following his arrest, filed a federal lawsuit against the city of La Mesa and Dages, alleging excessive force and wrongful arrest. In 2022, the city agreed to a $125,000 settlement. Reports say that $50,000 was paid directly by La Mesa, with the remainder covered by the city's insurance provider. Johnson remains active in community advocacy, focusing on police accountability and civil rights. Leslie Furcron, the protester blinded in one eye, also sued the city and won a $10 million judgment. The FBI joined with police in investigating crimes that occurred on May 30th and 31st, and numerous arrests and convictions were obtained. In the years following, community leaders have continued to lobby officers for deeper accountability, emphasizing that the journey toward rebuilding trust takes time. Looking ahead, La Mesa's experience is setting a precedent for other municipalities grappling with similar challenges and is fueling a determination to construct safer, more equitable communities in the years to come. We reached out to La Mesa's mayor, city manager, and police chief to ask what changes have been made to prevent a repeat of the 2020 protest-turned-riot that shocked and devastated many in the community. City manager Greg Humora says, following the 2020 after-action reviews, we committed to concrete changes. We improved interdepartmental collaboration, streamlined emergency protocols, and prioritized communication infrastructure. He adds, these investments have not only enhanced our preparedness, but they've also helped rebuild public trust, ensuring that if La Mesa faces a similar challenge in the future, we'll be ready to respond with clarity, unity, and care for our community. One of the key takeaways from the 2020 after-action reviews was the need for better preparedness and communication. As a result, Humora reveals, La Mesa has invested in consistent emergency drills, streamlined interdepartmental coordination, and reinforced its commitment to transparency through dedicated communication staffing. There has been a formalization of an emergency communications plan and increased emphasis on de-escalation tactics during high-tension encounters. Police Chief Sweeney, City Manager Humora, and La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis all say La Mesa has made quantifiable changes to prevent a similar crisis from happening again. Both Humora and Mayor Arapostathis were at the helm in 2020 and remain in their positions today. The city has been criticized for lack of communication to the public and the press during the unfolding crisis, since it sent out no Nixol alerts throughout that night and held no press conferences until declaring a curfew around 1 in the morning. Mayor Arapostathis says that since 2020, a dedications communications manager has been hired to lead citywide messaging efforts, a role that previously did not exist. Dedicated communications personnel are responsible for issuing timely and coordinated public information updates across platforms including Nixol, social media, the city's website, and direct media outreach. The position focuses on timely, accurate, and transparent communications with the public. The mayor told East County Magazine these improvements are designed to ensure that residents, stakeholders, and the press receive accurate and consistent updates throughout an unfolding emergency. The city also established a Community Police Oversight Board, a public forum that promotes accountability and engagement between the police department and the community. Chief Sweeney led the push for the city and police department to review all existing policies and began working with a newly formed Community Police Oversight Board to add context to the bias-free policing policy. Additionally, the La Mesa Police Department has significantly increased its community outreach efforts and regularly hosts public events to build trust and dialogue. Sweeney drew up a 6-step action plan as one of his first actions to set the police department up for success. The department's vision statement was updated, and the department now trains on procedural justice tenets and has incorporated de-escalation into its policies and expectations. Chief Sweeney says, "We also implemented and began using spider tech as a way to reach out to those that call and receive police services. The service sends a message with a survey via text or email. It's a way for the community to give us feedback and tell us how we are doing," Chief Sweeney says. He adds that the unprecedented civil unrest in May 2020 prompted necessary reflection and a renewed commitment to improve. Since then, Sweeney says, the La Mesa Police Department has taken concrete steps to build a stronger, more transparent, and accountable relationship with the community we serve. The Community Police Oversight Board and Independent Police Auditor ensure independent review of critical incidents and internal investigations. The new chief also held a series of listening events to meet with residents in each neighborhood and hear their concerns and talk about the changes that he proposed. Specifically, he explains, "We've overhauled our training programs to emphasize de-escalation, procedural justice, and cultural competency, and we've increased public access to policies and data through our website. We have formed a mobile field force team of officers that receive regular training on the latest best practices for crowd control. In addition, La Mesa police officers participate in local community engagement events such as its Citizens Academy, National Night Out, Coffee with a Cop, Kids Watch, and Youth Leadership Camp, all designed to foster open dialogue and approachability. Today, the police chief says, La Mesa is a safer, more connected city because of the partnerships we've built with residents, community leaders, and advocacy groups. Other meaningful changes include initiatives such as expanded mental health response partnerships, homeless outreach through the Homeless Outreach and Mobility Engagement, or HOME Team, and the police department's collaboration with the Community Police Oversight Board to address community concerns and improve department practices. Chief Sweeney concludes, "These efforts are grounded in our belief that policing must evolve with the community it serves. As we mark this 5-year anniversary, we do so not only in remembrance of the past, but with a deep sense of purpose for the future, a future built on trust, collaboration, and our shared commitment to a safer, more unified La Mesa." City Manager Humora says that from an administrative standpoint, the biggest logistical failures during the May 20 unrest were gaps in communication. Since then, he says, we've prioritized cross-department coordination and now hold regular internal emergency training and emergency training with neighboring cities to ensure we're ready to respond effectively and cohesively. Humora adds that La Mesa has much improved coordination between departments, including police, fire, and public works, to respond more effectively to emergencies or protests. The city's manager's office now plays a more proactive role in crisis communication, supported by a formal crisis communications plan and a dedicated communications manager, he notes. We've strengthened relationships with public safety leaders and enhanced our ability to push timely, consistent messaging to the community. This ensures that we can provide timely, accurate information to the public during emergencies, which helps maintain transparency and trust while supporting a more organized response, he concludes. East County Magazine caught up with a few people who felt the effects of that protest and their aftermath. Craig Maxwell owns Maxwell House of Books in the downtown village. When asked how the unrest affected his sense of safety or trust in the city, he minced no words. "Profoundly," he said. "The city stood back and watched while the village was looted and burned. We, the citizens, were on our own. He says he's lost at least a week's worth of business. Councilmember Laura Lothian, also a realtor with an office in the downtown village, was elected to the city council in 2021. She says the only time she's felt unsafe in La Mesa was in 2020, on May 30th and May 31st. I witnessed up close the nighttime mayhem of the rioters burning buildings and throwing rocks and bricks, Lothian says. My house and office were in the hot zone, so I feared my home could go up in flames. The windows of our office on La Mesa Boulevard were shattered, and phones and computers were stolen. But, she adds, though the riot was shocking and destructive, I know it was an unfortunate aberration. The morning following the lawless arson, theft, and vandalism, I joined hundreds of La Mesans in the streets cleaning debris and helping the targeted businesses recover. But as a realtor, she adds, for a couple of years, any mention of La Mesa instigated riot conversations, not good for home selling or buying. She believes the city leaders and law enforcement did take residents' and businesses' concerns very seriously. Immediately after the riot, businesses were boarded up, a curfew was put in place, and police presence was beefed up, albeit not in time to stop some destruction. Lothian says that overall, the city's law enforcement is well-liked and respected by the community, and that safety provided by the police is one of the main reasons La Mesa is a popular destination to live and visit. While the riot blindsided the city, Lothian believes it will not happen again. In hindsight, she says, city leaders should have read the tea leaves better and been more defensively proactive when other cities were experiencing riots and outsider crowds poured into La Mesa that day and evening. In the aftermath of the riots, the increased police presence made it clear that rioters were not going to be tolerated. The city council voted to give the La Mesa police more and better riot gear and equipment, too, she adds. Former La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid has been a sharp critic of the city and its response to the social unrest. Writing a letter to Rapistathis and the city council members, dated April 28, 2025, his letter likened the preventable riots to a day of infamy, in his words, such as the World Trade Center's Twin Towers attack by terrorists and the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City. Madrid wrote, "The May 30, 2020 riots clearly challenged the leadership skills of the city's mayor, and by every objective measure, he failed." Madrid challenged Rapistathis to assure residents that the council now has appropriate protocol procedures to deal with similar future events. Mayor Rapistathis responds that the events of 2020 left a lasting impact on the community, shaping its commitment to unite and move forward. Since then, La Mesa has embarked on a journey of rebuilding, fostering a stronger sense of solidarity among our residents. Mayor Rapistathis says, "Our ongoing efforts prioritize a community where residents and visitors feel safe, a community that is welcoming and inclusive, and a community that reflects our dedication to the well-being of all who call La Mesa home." Rapistathis told East County Magazine that over the last 5 years, La Mesa has made significant strides in how we approach public demonstrations, community trust, and public safety. We've learned that communication is critical, especially during times of intense public emotion. That means making a genuine effort to establish dialogue with protesters and maintaining transparency throughout any response, he adds. If faced with a similar flashpoint today, the city's response would reflect lessons it has learned, the mayor assures. We're more prepared to communicate early and often, coordinate effectively across departments, and lead with a community-first mindset to help prevent escalation, he says. Additionally, the city manager's office now plays a more proactive leadership role in crisis communication, says Humora, and La Mesa has strengthened coordination between departments as well as with the public. Since that night of chaos 5 years ago, the city manager concludes, we've made it a priority to improve how we prepare for and respond to emergencies. One of the most significant changes has been our investment in regular emergency training, both internally and in collaboration with neighboring cities like El Cajon and Lemon Grove to ensure a unified and effective response. Despite a reputation tarnished by the 2020 night of chaos, La Mesa leaders are determined to restore the city's luster and live up to La Mesa's motto, Jewel of the Hills.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Juliet Sanders with a health report. Health leaders are reacting with alarm to Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s announcement that the Centers for Disease Control have removed their recommendation that pregnant women and healthy children get COVID vaccines. Assemblymember and Dr. Akilah Weber heads up the Pediatric and Adolescent Gynecology Division at Rady Children's Hospital. She says RFK Jr.'s statement is dangerous and irresponsible, adding, pregnant women and children have faced real documented risk for COVID-19. Dismissing science only puts lives at risk and undermines public trust. Dr. Stephen Fleischman, president of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, shares that concern. He says, the science has not changed. It is very clear that COVID infection during pregnancy can be catastrophic and lead to major disability. Dr. Fleischman says the COVID vaccine is safe during pregnancy and can protect both patients and infants, CNN reports. And he adds, in fact, growing evidence shows just how much vaccination during pregnancy protects the infant at birth. With the vast majority of hospitalized infants less than 6 months of age, those who are not yet eligible for vaccination, born to unvaccinated mothers. Kennedy claims there is a lack of clinical data to support the repeat booster in children. He wants longer-term testing of boosters, which means delaying access as the virus mutates, even as a new strain of COVID has recently been spreading across the U.S. and in California. However, both young children and pregnant women are considered to be at higher risk of severe complications from COVID-19 infections. Studies have found that COVID-19 vaccinations reduce the risk of hospitalization for pregnant women and infants younger than the age of 6 months. Dr. Ian McCarty, Senior Director of Microbiology and Infectious Diseases at Scripps Institute in San Diego, voices concern that Kennedy's actions could breed skepticism of vaccines because we're not really giving a good reason for why we're changing the eligibility requirements. It's considered universally safe and effective, he told Fox 5. A CDC panel is also moving toward restricting COVID booster doses to be only available to people over the age of 65 and people at high risk, such as those with diabetes. Yet many people outside those categories have died of COVID. Restricting vaccine access for healthy younger adults could also mean hospital workers at high risk of being exposed to COVID, and caregivers for vulnerable seniors may no longer have access to get vaccinated. Some insurance companies may end coverage of the vaccines for those groups the CDC no longer recommends receive repeat boosters, limiting availability even if vaccines remain available but not recommended. Back in October 2021, East County Magazine interviewed Dr. Mark Sawyer, infectious disease specialist at Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego, and an advisor to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on COVID-19 vaccines for children and booster shots, as well as an advisor to Governor Gavin Newsom and county supervisors. We asked him to assess the safety of COVID vaccines compared to the risks of COVID-19 for children and teens. Dr. Sawyer revealed that hundreds of children had been treated at Rady Children's Hospital for COVID-19, including 75 treated in the intensive care unit and another 75 diagnosed with multi-system inflammatory disease, a rare but serious complication of COVID-19 in children. He warns parents, to say that COVID is not serious in children is underestimating the virus. Serious complications of the vaccine, such as blood clots and heart problems, have occurred in only a couple of cases per every million shots administered, Dr. Sawyer said. But COVID can cause the same serious conditions and more, so the COVID virus actually possesses a far greater threat to children and others than the vaccines. With the Trump administration's top health official now spreading misinformation, it's worth remembering another warning offered by Dr. Sawyer, San Diego's top pediatric expert on COVID in children and the vaccines. Dr. Sawyer echoed others in cautioning that COVID is far more dangerous to pregnant women and their unborn babies than the vaccine, which can provide life-saving immunities to both mothers and their children.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Tidwell with a Green Scene Report. San Diego County supervisors have approved the purchase of 540 acres in Santa Isabel for $5.1 million to expand its conservation efforts. Located in a designated conservation area in Santa Isabel, the land will expand an existing 6,900-acre preserve slated to protect habitat for sensitive species, including mountain lion, mule deer, Stevens kangaroo rat, and Engelmann oak. Parks and Recreation Director Jason Hemmons says, "Our team is very proud of this new addition to our park system, as it strengthens San Diego County's solid reputation for protecting natural resources and species that will be enjoyed for generations." The property is directly adjacent to the existing Santa Isabel Preserve and provides connectivity to public lands to the north. In addition to supporting the county's Climate Action Plan and General Plan Update goals, the land acquisition enhances biodiversity and provides flood control benefits and protection of water quality.
Former El Cajon Councilman Bessman, or Ben, Colosho and his wife Jessica Detta made major unpermitted construction changes using unlicensed contractors at their Fletcher Hills home that they are currently renting to a family with children. That's the finding of San Diego Superior Court Judge Joel Wolfhill. However, the judge also ruled against the city of El Cajon's request to impose over $2.5 million in fines and denied without prejudice the city's request to put the home into receivership to be sold to pay those fines, meaning fines or receivership could still be allowed in the future if the Colosho's fail to comply with the court orders. The judge ordered Colosho to allow a city inspector access to determine whether health or safety hazards exist. The court order also prohibits occupancy, including rental of the property, until any code violations found are corrected, and until Colosho complies with building, housing, and zoning codes. The court set a status conference for June 18th at 3 p.m. to hear any objections from either side, as well as to set an inspection date for the home and resolve other issues. The city contends that Colosho and Detta, among other things, illegally built unpermitted exterior stairs, a deck, and a second kitchen, also operating an illegal bed and breakfast and using an accessory structure as a dwelling unit. Concerns include potential hazards involving gas and electric work done without a licensed contractor or city inspections, as well as added weight on an upper story from the unpermitted additions. The couple claims they never received notice of the violations and contend that the enforcement efforts were politically motivated. In closing arguments, they provided a photo with several major construction changes on the first, third, and fourth floors, each labeled as a nothing burger. Judge Wolfhill states, defendants, using primarily if not entirely unlicensed contractors, renovated the entire residence top to bottom. The depiction of the residence before and after the construction is startling, says the judge. However, he notes that the city has not proven harm to the public, largely because Colosho failed to allow the city inspectors onto the property. Colosho and Detta, who now live out of state, claim the property on Cliffdale Road is in a trust owned by Maximilian Von Ayers, but the judge ruled that Von Ayers is an alias of Ben Colosho, who represented himself in court and claimed his Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination when questioned about this on the stand. A former tenant, however, Daniel Alala, testified that when he spoke with Colosho, his voice sounded the same as Von Ayers' voice. Colosho has been working recently as a chef at Smithmore Castle, a bed and breakfast in North Carolina, using the alias Chef Benjamin Epicure. In recent court documents, he's indicated he also works part of the year in Dubai. The city code compliance case is not the only legal problem facing Colosho and his wife. In a separate case, the couple has been ordered to appear in a San Diego Superior Court on June 9th to begin serving 8 days in jail for criminal contempt of court. If they comply, their jail sentence would end just days before their ordered appearance in the code compliance hearing. The judge in the contempt case, however, could potentially extend their jail sentence if Colosho and Detta still fail to cooperate in providing financial details sought in Lena Chari's civil case against them. The contempt of court charges came after attorney Chari sued Colosho and Detta, claiming they defamed her in retaliation after she sued for damages suffered when a car in a car wash owned by Colosho crashed into Chari's business next door. Colosho and his wife failed to comply with court orders to produce financial documents in that case, lied under oath, and failed to show up at numerous court-mandated appearances, the judge found, leading to the finding of the couple guilty of criminal contempt. Colosho has previously pleaded guilty to a workman's compensation fraud charge and settled another defamation case filed by beauty queen pageants and a taco shop owner. One pageant contestant also claimed sexual harassment, accusing Colosho of offering to trade sex for the crown. A Chamber of Commerce and beauty pageant run by Colosho were shut down amid evidence of fraudulent claims regarding nonprofit status. Colosho resigned from the El Cajon City Council in March 2019 amid multiple controversies. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
CAL FIRE has suspended residential outdoor burning permits within the state responsibility areas of San Diego County effective June 2nd. The suspension includes burning landscape debris, such as branches and leaves. This decision to suspend burn permits follows minimal winter rainfall, rising temperatures, and seasonal changes that have caused the grass crop and other vegetation to dry out quickly, increasing the risk of wildfires across our region. Since January 1st, CAL FIRE and other fire agencies statewide have responded to over 1,900 wildfires. While residential debris burning is suspended, CAL FIRE urges residents to enhance their wildfire preparedness efforts. CAL FIRE Chief Tony Meacham says, "With the transition to warmer temperatures and the summer season, I encourage our residents to prioritize creating defensible space around their homes. This will give your home the best chance of surviving a wildfire," he says. Residents are encouraged to clear all dead or dying vegetation within at least 100 feet of all structures, landscape with fire-resistant plants, and avoid planting anything near the structure, and dispose of landscape debris through chipping, green waste collection, or delivery to a biomass energy facility. The department may issue temporary burning permits that are restricted if there's an essential reason for doing so, such as public health and safety. Agriculture, land management, fire training, and other industrial types of burning may proceed if a CAL FIRE official inspects the burn site and issues a special permit. For more information on creating defensible space, wildfire preparedness, and fire prevention, you can visit readyforwildfire.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. CAL FIRE has suspended residential outdoor burning permits within the state responsibility areas of San Diego County effective June 2nd. The suspension includes burning landscape debris, such as branches and leaves. This decision to suspend burn permits follows minimal winter rainfall, rising temperatures, and seasonal changes that have caused the grass crop and other vegetation to dry out quickly, increasing the risk of wildfires across our region. Since January 1st, CAL FIRE and other fire agencies statewide have responded to over 1,900 wildfires. While residential debris burning is suspended, CAL FIRE urges residents to enhance their wildfire preparedness efforts. CAL FIRE Chief Tony Meacham says, "With the transition to warmer temperatures and the summer season, I encourage our residents to prioritize creating defensible space around their homes. This will give your home the best chance of surviving a wildfire," he says. Residents are encouraged to clear all dead or dying vegetation within at least 100 feet of all structures, landscape with fire-resistant plants, and avoid planting anything near the structure, and dispose of landscape debris through chipping, green waste collection, or delivery to a biomass energy facility. The department may issue temporary burning permits that are restricted if there's an essential reason for doing so, such as public health and safety. Agriculture, land management, fire training, and other industrial types of burning may proceed if a CAL FIRE official inspects the burn site and issues a special permit. For more information on creating defensible space, wildfire preparedness, and fire prevention, you can visit readyforwildfire.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
It's been a year since the death of NBA superstar and La Mesa hometown hero, Bill Walton, of cancer. To commemorate the anniversary, San Diego Sport Innovators, or SDSI, announced this week that it will pay homage to Walton, its former chairman, by launching the Walton Innovation Network, or WIN, WIN, as phase one of a Bill Walton legacy project. Under Walton's 14-year leadership as executive chairman, San Diego Sport Innovators has built a business community dedicated to growth of the San Diego lifestyle industry. Embodying Walton's core attributes of humility, curiosity, giving, and reinvention, the organization aspires to help all individuals, not just San Diegans, get outside, get active, and lead healthier lives. Executive Director Bob Reif says, "The Walton Innovation Network will be an expansion of SDSI's current mentoring programs, dear to Bill's heart, into a network of programs dedicated to his legacy of uplifting others, hard work, and give back. The WIN project will support entrepreneurs, innovators, athletes, and dreamers in all stages of business from the idea stage on up who are changing the future of the industry, Reef adds. SDSI's business mentoring programs were built on Walton's mantra, the best way to get where you are going is to ask someone who is on their way back. Through unique mentoring structures, SDSI mentor programs have helped to scale more than 150 businesses, 78% of which are still active or have been acquired. All of this has been made possible through the generosity of more than 100 volunteer executive mentors. Board member Mike Irwin says Bill's inherent curiosity about people is what made him such a natural helper. With the announcement of Wynn, we are just getting started. And when it comes to preserving Bill's legacy, the future is full of possibilities. The sports and active lifestyle industry has a significant impact on our local economy, with $6.3 billion in total economic output, 57,000 local jobs, and $3.6 billion contributed to San Diego County's gross domestic product. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
In an affirmation of its commitment to building the healthcare workforce of tomorrow, the Grossmont Healthcare District has awarded nearly $320,000 in scholarships to 63 local students for the 2024/2025 academic year. The awards were presented at a special ceremony honoring 39 graduating high school seniors and 24 professionals from East County who are pursuing careers through advanced certifications and training in the healthcare field. The scholarships support students across multiple academic and professional levels, including those studying medicine, nursing, behavioral health, and other in-demand specialties. GHD board member Nadia Farjoud, a member of the scholarship committee, says each of these students represents hope for the future of healthcare in our region. They're stepping into roles that our communities desperately need, bringing compassion, dedication, and a strong sense of purpose with them. Established in 1999, GHD's scholarship program is a cornerstone of the district's broader workforce development strategy to address persistent shortages in the healthcare sector. This strategy includes support for Grossmont Union High School District Healthcare Career Pathways Program, which introduces high school students to real-world healthcare experiences, as well as a partnership with the East County Economic Development Council on the Healthcare Career Pipeline Project, a regional initiative focused on addressing emerging needs and opportunities in the healthcare sector and enhancing workforce capacity. Board member Gloria Chadwick, a registered nurse and member of the scholarship committee, says, "Our region, and particularly East County, continues to face major gaps in access to healthcare professionals. Investing in the education of local students helps ensure we can meet this growing demand while supporting our residents in achieving their dreams." According to the California Board of Registered Nursing, the state of California is projected to face a shortfall of registered nurses through at least 2028. In San Diego County, the San Diego Workforce Partnership has identified healthcare support and practitioner roles as among the most in-demand and fastest-growing occupations. Nationally, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics anticipates the addition of 2 million healthcare jobs from 2021 to 2031, growing faster than any other employment sector. These careers not only fill critical staffing needs, they help elevate entire communities. Healthcare professionals earn sustainable, high-wage incomes, which raise overall socioeconomic conditions in the region. By investing in the next generation of care providers, Grossmont Healthcare District is advancing both health and economic opportunity for East County families. This year's awards also reflect the district's deepening investment in regional healthcare infrastructure, including the recent launch of a new primary care physician residency program in partnership with Sharp Healthcare. Based in East County, the program aims to address the area's shortage of primary care physicians by retaining trained doctors locally. Amy Abrams, Chief Community Health Officer at Grossmont Healthcare District, says, "Our workforce strategy isn't just about education. It's about building a stronger, healthier future for East County. By supporting students at all stages of their journey, we are creating a healthcare pipeline that starts here and stays here," she concludes. You can learn more about the Grossmont Healthcare District Scholarship Programs and Healthcare Workforce Initiatives at grossmonthealthcare.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
Next up, we have some national news headlines from Public News Service's 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The president's rationale for imposing these powerful tariffs was legally sound and grounded in common sense.
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says the two courts that ruled President Donald Trump lacks the authority to impose his sweeping import taxes are guilty of judicial overreach. An appeals court is letting most of the tariffs move forward for now. A separate federal court has temporarily blocked Trump from stripping Harvard's ability to enroll the many students it gets from other countries. Sean Stevens with the Libertarian Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression says that move and threats to the visas of activists threaten campus speech.
Almost everybody is facing these threats. A lot of people who previously would say there's not really that much of a problem, they recognize that there can be. There's a much bigger cause for concern because it's now also coming from the government.
A report from the foundation found nearly two-thirds of campus speech controversies over the last 4 years resulted in the students being punished in some way. The White House is facing pushback for ordering ICE to arrest 3,000 people per day. Critics warn the policy could overwhelm detention centers and sideline other law enforcement priorities. An unnamed Israeli official tells CNN the government has agreed to a U.S.-brokered ceasefire deal. Hamas says it is considering the 60-day pause that would see hostages returned and aid increased, but wants more progress to a final peace. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Years after the Cottonwood sand mine was first proposed along the Sweetwater River on the site of the Cottonwood Golf Course in Rancho San Diego, the San Diego County Planning Commission will be holding a hearing on the proposed sand mine. This will occur Friday, June 13th at 9 a.m. In March, the Valle de Oro Community Planning Group voted 10-1 to oppose the controversial project with one abstention. The plan calls for mining 4.7 million cubic yards, producing nearly 5.7 million tons of washed concrete sand or construction aggregate over a period of 10 years. The mining would be done in phases, with reclamation planned after each phase for a total of 12 years of activity. The developers said that the sand is needed for highways and construction locally to reduce the need to import sand for such projects. But thousands of residents have signed petitions and voiced opposition to the project, stating concerns over water and air pollution, noise, traffic, and potential property value declines. Concerns have also been raised about nesting birds and other wildlife in the adjacent federal wildlife preserve immediately downstream from the project. The Stop Cottonwood Sand Mine Group is leading opposition, urging concerned residents to attend the County Planning Commission meeting on June 13th. Their group is also raising funds for legal experts to review the latest environmental impact report after an earlier EIR was rejected as flawed and recirculated to the community. For any concerned residents interested in attending the meeting, it will be held on Friday, June 13th at 9 a.m. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Wooden Ambulance, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.